Chapter 1. Germantown. I came into this world, according to my mother, at 3 a.m., after an all-night labor session. My mother and I never really talked about it, but I've often wondered when the doctors told my parents that I had cerebral palsy. The only thing my mom told me is the doctors told her I would probably never walk. Knowing her, that was not an option, and to her credit, she did everything a mother could to prove the doctors wrong by making sure I received the best medical treatment available at the time. That meant spending time at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, one of the best then, as it is today. My father, on the other hand, never really talked about my disability. I have often wondered how he felt when he got the news that his firstborn probably was never going to walk. A World War II vet, hard-ass soldier that helped liberate concentration camps, comes home, gets married, and his firstborn, a son, is disabled. To be honest here, if it were me, I would have been devastated. My father, not one to show a lot of emotion, never said anything about it to me. Don't misunderstand me. He loved me, that I know. But it was my mother that would be the one that would push me to achieve. I truly believe that the love between mother and child is stronger than father and child, at least from my point of view. My dad had his favorites, and that was fine with me. My brother George, for instance, served in the Navy and Army National Guard. Every time he was around my dad, he became a different man. You see, my dad served in the Army during World War II, and when he was discharged, joined the Navy Reserve. Like father, like son. I, on the other hand, wanted to serve in Vietnam, going as far as asking my family physician to write me a letter stating I could work in a MASH unit. I was drafted, had my physical, and received a 1Y classification, which meant it would take a state of emergency declaration or declared war before I would be drafted. Eventually, my status was changed to 4F. I have been honored by the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force for recruiting efforts. I am proud to say I have ancestors who fought in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, Civil War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and in the Middle East. I come from a long line of patriots. I remember growing up, my dad would take me to his place of work, Philadelphia Steel and Wire. He would carry me around to meet the guys who always gave me money. I have fond memories of those trips, as well as trips to Wayne Junction, a train stop in Germantown, just to watch the trains. Yes, he loved me, but I'm sure it was hard for him to show it. My early childhood memories are of hospitals and surgeries on my legs. The first, and I don't remember how old I was an operation called heel cord lengthening, done on both feet. I'm not going to get into the technical part of this operation, only to say it sucked. By the way, this is where I learned to dislike Jell-O. We would get Jell-O in the hospital for dessert. When it's left uncovered in the fridge too long, it gets this film on top, and man, it's gross. I have never had Jell-O since then. Jell-O pudding, on the other hand, I absolutely love. I don't really remember when I took my first step, but I think it was around the time I was 3 years old, wearing braces from the knee down to the foot using crutches. Mom won, doctors zero. Lots of physical therapy and good doctors set me on a path that would eventually lead me to walk unassisted in the future. Next came braces from the waist down to the feet on both legs with crutches, which I absolutely hated. This was around the time I was 5. For the next 3 years, I would wear the braces and was a very unhappy child. My friends on East Seymour Street in Germantown would be riding bikes and roller skating, and all I could do was watch. At times, my parents would let me lose the braces and let me play with my friends. Yes, I had friends growing up that didn't care about my disability. Of course, they all lived on Seymour Street, and once I started to leave the safety of Seymour Street, I found out how evil and hateful the world could be. Let me introduce you to my very first friend in the world, Tom McKinley. Growing up in those early years, no one had a better friend than Tom. I learned how to play baseball with Tom and his brothers. On weekends, my parents would let me play without my braces on. Mr. McKinley would take us all to Fern Hill Park and teach us. On East Seymour Street, we would play half ball, a game where you cut a pimple ball in half, toss like a frisbee, and try to hit it with a broomstick. Same with hose ball, where you would cut up a garden hose into 4-inch pieces and again, try and hit it with a broomstick. Distance was the key in scoring, past the pitcher, it's a single, one car length past the pitcher, a double, and so on. I just got off the phone with Tom, and we, of course, were talking about growing up in Germantown. He now lives at the Jersey Shore. During our conversation, I asked him why he never asked me about my disability. He told me, there was no reason to. You did everything we did. You even played soccer. That's when I remembered about the Germantown Boys Club. They had a soccer league and had no problem letting me play. My position was right winger. During the summer, we would go swimming in the club's outdoor pool. The Boys Club had special summer programs during the week that we would go to. Germantown Boys Club was located on Penn Street, not that far of a walk from East Seymour. My parents would allow me to take off my braces when we went to the Boys Club. No question, Tom and I had a lot of fun growing up in Germantown. Tom and I went to different schools. He went to St. Francis of Assisi on Green Street. I went to Widener Memorial School at Broad and Olney Streets. My school was for disabled children from K through 12th grade. I'll get back to Tom in a little bit. While in first grade, I was attending catechism classes at St. Francis to get ready for First Holy Communion. This is where I would meet Sister Anastasia, SSJ, one of two nuns that I believe would change my life. Sister Anastasia would prepare me for my First Holy Communion. When that day came, there I was in a white suit, braces, and crutches, walking up to the altar, Sister Anastasia by my side all the way, making sure everything went fine. And it did. Somewhere, I have a picture of me and my dad on East Seymour Street of that day. Now, Sister Anastasia would make sure I would go to 9 a.m. Mass every Sunday. If I showed up late, like after the gospel was read by the priest, she would always know and make me stay for the 10 a.m. Mass. I would swear that an angel was telling her I was late for Mass. Did I mention that I had my very first schoolboy crush on Sister Anastasia? I was madly in love with her, and I didn't care who knew about it. Now, I continued to go to school at Widener Memorial School until early third grade. This is when I asked my parents if I could go to St. Francis with Tom and my other friends. After some discussions with both schools, it was decided I would be able to go to school with my friends. I believe I was one of the first students that transferred from a school for disabled kids to a school for normal kids in Philadelphia. I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I'm sure my parents did. Plus, I had no idea that Sister Anastasia would eventually be leaving St. Francis. Before I tell you about my time at St. Francis, let me say that my time at Widener Memorial was great. I was no different from any other kid. My physical therapy at the school included time in the big indoor swimming pool. Frankly, it's a great school, and I never got into a fight. This would change. For me, however, it was not what I wanted. I wanted to be with my friends. This attitude would serve me well throughout my life. When told, "Why would you want to do that?" which was the first response from the teachers at Widener when I wanted to go to St. Francis, I said, "Why not? Why not?" At a very young age, I hated when somebody would say, "You can't do that because you're..." I did not know then that the teachers were trying to protect me from what was to be a very tough part of growing up for me. They knew that children who were normal would make fun of me, calling me names, not wanting me to be part of their playtime in the schoolyard. Remember, up to this point in my life, I had none of this. My friends on East Seymour Street never made fun of me. We played together with no problems, especially when I was allowed out of my braces. Day one at school, I could tell right from the start it was going to be different. The other kids were staring at me and giggling at me as well. Since I'd transferred from Widener Memorial School midway through third grade, I was seated near the back of the classroom. Normally in Catholic school, you're seated alphabetically. You could hear me coming from 100 yards away. Walking in braces sounds like a Sherman tank coming at you. And when you sit down, you have to unlock the braces at your knees, which made more noise. So, yeah, everyone was looking at me, and that made me very self-conscious. As I recall, that was it for the first day. Nothing too bad, but the sisters were looking out for me, I think. It was bound to happen, however. Trouble with a capital T found me, and it was during recess in the schoolyard. Understand, walking around in heavy braces and crutches actually made my legs stronger and gave me upper body strength as well. Like most kids, I wanted to play, but I couldn't do much while in the braces. However, all the other kids were running around, and as chance would have it, one of the kids ran right into me. This particular young man bounced off me like a pimple ball off a red brick wall. He started crying and I started laughing. I mean, come on. It was funny from my point of view. He thought I was going to fall down and instead his pride got hurt. When the sisters came over to see what happened, it turned out that it was my fault, according to his friends, because I didn't move to get out of the way. Two things came out of this incident. First, during recess, I had to stay off to the side so I couldn't get in the way of the other children playing. And second, I became more determined to get the hell out of these braces. This event also started the name-calling in the schoolyard, which I was able to ignore for a good while. I would always ask Sister Anastasia why they called me names and always laughed at me. She said that God made me this way for a special reason, and that someday I would know what that reason was, and I was to ignore those that made fun of me. This is when Sister Rose came into my life. She was the choir director, and apparently Sister Anastasia asked her to see if I could sing and join the choir that sings for Mass. Sister Rose came up to me and asked if I would like to try out for the choir. Me? I said, in total astonishment. Yes, I would, Sister. Come with me, Mr. Brown. Let's see if you can sing a little. We went into a room in the school that had a piano, and she hit a key and asked me to mimic the note. We did this for several notes on the piano, and she decided I was an alto. She told me to wait in the room and that someone would be in shortly to give me another test. A few minutes later, an eighth grader, I think, came in and on the blackboard wrote the following: Dominus vobiscum, Kyrie eleison, and Christe eleison. I was asked to read each and to tell him what each meant. Well, being a good Catholic boy who went to church every Sunday 9 a.m. Mass, this was no problem. Back then, the Mass was done in Latin, and the above were responses to the priests during the Mass. I passed, and Sister Rose came back in and welcomed me to the choir. I was so proud, I couldn't wait to tell my parents. By the way, for those of you who don't know Latin, Dominus vobiscum means, "The Lord be with you." Kyrie eleison means, "Lord have mercy," and Christe eleison means, "Christ have mercy." I would eventually learn many songs in Latin. The choir would sing at the novenas during Lent, and of course, Midnight Mass Christmas Eve, which made my parents very proud. Tom McGinley was also in the choir, so I had a friend there, which made it easier for me. We were both altos. On more than one occasion, Sister Rose would tell us we were a little too loud and to turn it down a little. None of the other choir members laughed at me or called me names. I suspect Sister Rose had something to do with that, but over time, I would make new friends. I'll get back to my time in the choir a little later. My days at school would be the same. Other kids staring, laughing, and calling me names. I would let it be and not do anything about it, knowing that I would disappoint both Sister Anastasia and Sister Rose. That does not mean it didn't hurt. It's very hard going to school every day, knowing that the other kids were going to make fun of me. I would go home, and the first thing I would do is take off the braces. I hated them and wanted to get rid of them for good. I would have dinner, do my homework, take a bath, and go to bed. It was there in my room that I would cry myself to sleep, asking God, what did I ever do to him that he made me this way? I would ask him to fix me because I wanted to ride a bike and roller skate like everyone else. I would wake up in the morning and nothing changed. I'd put on the braces, have breakfast, and be off to school, knowing all too well that it was going to be another day of name-calling, staring, and laughing at me. When I went to Catholic school, they had this little magazine called, if I remember correctly, the Catholic Times. It would have stories from all over the world about Catholics in other countries. One story has stuck with me all my life. It occurred, I believe, in Russia. A school teacher in a Russian school was trying to make a point that there is no God, no Jesus. To prove his point, he sent a student into the hallway and had the students in the classroom call him back in. Of course, when he heard his name, he came back into the room. Now, the teacher, with all the confidence in the world, said to the students, "Call for Jesus and see what happens." Atheism was doctrine in Cold War Russia. However, there were many believers as well, mostly underground, however. Anyway, the class calls for Jesus to come into the room, and after some silence, a young Jesus appears before the class. That is all I remember about the story, but for a young mind like mine, it was very powerful. That's why I believed if I prayed hard enough, Jesus would fix me. It was just a matter of time. Every night I would pray and ask to be fixed. believing it would happen. I still believe it, but now I know it's his will, not mine. Soon it would be summertime, and I would be headed off to Variety Club camp. I'm sure most of you have heard of Variety Club, a camp where disabled kids go to learn and play and enjoy the outdoors without anyone calling you names or laughing at you. For 1 month each summer, I was normal. Every kid at camp had some disability. We learned how to swim, camp out, make a bed, play baseball, and learn how to box, which would eventually come in handy down the road. This summer would be different, as doctors at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children told my mom I was old enough to have surgery on both my legs. The promise, I guess, was I would walk better and would be able to lose the braces. I say, I guess, because I don't remember being told why I was to have the surgery, only that I was going to have it. Great, here I go again, more time in the hospital. Little did I realize what was going to happen. School let out, I was promoted into fourth grade, and now it was time for surgery. I don't remember much going into the surgery, but when I woke up, I thought I was in a nightmare. I had a cast on that started just above my waist, down both legs, and covering both feet with a bar between my legs to keep them apart. I would be like this for 8 weeks. When I was brought home, my bed was moved downstairs and my mom would sleep on the couch. My first experience with bedpans and urinals, I was not happy at all. The worst part was I had to be turned over every few hours. I felt like a pancake. To help my parents, the sisters from the Covenant would come to the house to help my mom clean, cook, and of course flip the human pancake. They would do this during the day and well into the nighttime hours, so you can see why I have a special place in my heart for St. Joe Nuns. My friend Tom came to see me and brought an electric football game. Football players with little felt pads on their feet and a felt football. You'd line up the players, turn on the game, the metal part of the field would vibrate, and the players would move all over the field. The player with the football had to make it across the goal line before being touched by an opposing player. It was a very noisy game, but a lot of fun. Tom would show up every day just to play the game with me. You just don't forget that, and I never have. The big day came when the cast was going to come off, and I was itching to get the damn thing off. The doctors used this little buzzsaw kind of tool to cut it off. There would be a top and a bottom to it. When they took the top part off and lifted me out of the cast, both my legs bent at the knees for the first time in 8 weeks. And the muscles were stiff, and the pain was so bad, I remember screaming at the top of my lungs and crying. My mother's sister Hilda and her husband, my uncle Chick, started crying along with my mother. My father, on the other hand, was a rock and helped the doctor put my body back into the bottom part of the cast. They would put the top part back on and tape it up. My parents were sent home with instructions to take me out of the cast 3 times a day and to do physical therapy. The therapy included getting my legs and pushing them together, as well as bending my legs at the knees. This was painful enough that I would cry loud enough that our neighbors would hear it. Remember, Seymour Street was row homes, and if you were loud enough, you could hear what was going on next door. This would prove embarrassing at times when I would ask my mom and dad about the noise next door, and they would tell me to mind my own business and go to bed. I gather you probably know what was going on next door, so I'll leave it at that. Anyway, I remember the police showing up at the house one night, wanting to know what was going on and why neighbors were hearing all the crying and commotion. My mother explained everything, and Officer Fitzpatrick, who lived down the street, also showed up and took care of things. After that, the police never showed up again, but the therapy continued. I would go back to the hospital to get the staples taken out. The surgery was done on both my hips. I don't know what they did to this day, or I forgot what it was they did. All I know is when I walked, my feet no longer pointed inward, but pointed outward more like a normal person's would. I still walked with a limp, but I walked and was able to run as well. Think about it, the very first time that I could run. The feeling was just incredible. I don't know if I can explain the feeling I had when I took off down the street showing everybody that I could run. I still remember how it felt that first time all these years later. I eventually got rid of the cast, braces, and crutches. I was a happy, more confident young man. Mom, 2. Doctors, 0. It was fourth grade and back to school, only to find out that Sister Anastasia was no longer at St. Francis, but now at the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul in Center City, Philadelphia. It might as well have been a million miles away. I would never see her again, but when I was older in my teens, called and talked to her on the phone. Yes, she remembered me. We talked for about 15 minutes, ending with a promise to meet. We never did fulfill that promise, and I recently found out that she passed away on May 13, 2011, at St. Joseph Villa, no more than 15 minutes from where I live today. I will pay my respects before this book is published, and that is a promise I will keep. No longer in braces, I was running around at recess having fun and, for the most part, staying out of trouble. For the most part. Then came the day when some bully called me names and laughed at me. The fight started and ended in less than a minute with me getting a black eye and walking away from any further fighting. Not a smart thing to do, considering everyone thought I was a chicken, which invited more fights that I would walk away from. First of all, black eyes hurt, and I did not want to disappoint Sister Rose, to whom I became very attached to. She said the same thing that Sister Anastasia did, that I was special and God had a plan for me. I was thinking to myself, was that plan for me to be the punching bag for half of Germantown? Now, I would never say that to Sister Rose. I knew even nuns had limits when it came to a smart-mouthed kid. Fourth grade was a tough year for me, going through school trying to avoid fights and walking away from fights. I did have the choir and loved singing at Mass, and especially at Christmas midnight Mass. We would have special gowns to wear. White with red top, trimmed in gold high white collar and red bow. We would sing the responses to the priest and then a concert after Mass. Some of the songs in Latin, some in English. So time would pass and spring would come, then summer and back to Variety Club camp. For 1 month out of the year, I would spend time with kids like me. There was no staring, no laughing at someone, just fun. I would meet my first girlfriend here, Pamela. Blonde, blue eyes, and I was smitten big time. When you're 9 years old, holding hands is a big deal. And every once in a while, she'd give me a kiss on the cheek. I would get into my bunk in the cabin and dream of that kiss. Being boyfriend and girlfriend was tough 1 month a year, but it lasted through 1963, my last summer at camp. I would find out she died in a car crash with some others when I was about 15 years old. I sent a letter to her parents expressing how sorry I was for their loss, and that I would miss her very much. I learned at that time, nothing is guaranteed, including life. A valuable lesson, albeit a tough one. At camp, my self-confidence grew. I learned to play baseball and was a pretty good hitter. I didn't run very fast, but I could smack that baby for distance. I learned how to go camping, fire building and safety, pitching a tent, and cooking outdoors. I also learned to really love music, especially good old rock and roll, which the counselors would play on their old tube radios that they had plugged in. But every Sunday morning before being sent to church, Uncle Hash would have on classical music, which I would learn to love as well. As a traffic reporter many years later, I was able to have our helicopter land on the grounds and have the campers come and sit in it. Our pilot would do a short presentation as well as the Philadelphia police officer who flew with us. I would finish up explaining what my job as a traffic reporter entailed. In 1996, Variety Club honored me with its Lifetime Achievement Award, which I am very proud of. At my acceptance speech, I accepted the award for all the counselors. Uncle Hash, Uncle Gene, Uncle Al, and Uncle Cy, they were the ones I could remember. You see, they helped me gain confidence to go out into the world and not be afraid to try new things, and especially not to be afraid of failing. I've often wondered what became of these men. I hope they went on to live long and prosperous lives. One summer, my dad built me a milk carton scooter. Let me explain. It's a wooden milk box about 3 feet high, nailed to a 2x4 that was about 3 feet long. On the front and back of the 2x4 underneath were nailed roller skates. Remember now, my balance is not very good on bikes and roller skates, but for some reason I was able to use the scooter and not fall flat on my face. I finally could play with the other kids on the street who also had homemade scooters. I don't even to this day have the words to tell how wonderful it felt to be able to play with everyone and not sit on the side and just watch. Fifth grade would come, and with it more fights than even I would ever imagine. It started one day while I was walking home and stopped into the corner candy store on Germantown Avenue near East Seymour Street. I picked up some penny candy, Mary Janes, and Tootsie Rolls. I walked out of the store and this kid said to me, "Give me the bag." And of course I said no. Well, he took the bag and just started to walk away. He didn't even run. I guess he figured I would just walk away, which was my reputation at the time. But this time something in me said, enough. I chased him, caught up, and beat the crap out of him. This poor kid never knew what hit him. I'd had enough of the name-calling, the stares, and the laughing at me, and I took it out on him. So what happened? His parents came to my house wanting my parents to punish me for beating up their kid. As luck would have it, what happened on Germantown Avenue was seen by other kids, and my parents were able to explain what happened, and there would be no punishment handed out. That boy stayed away from me from that time on. The word was out that I no longer would walk away from a fight. In reality, I would try to avoid a fight. Getting hit in the face really hurts. This didn't always work, and I didn't always win, but I did gain respect. The fights in Germantown would end. It was time for sixth grade. Little did I know that sixth grade would not be spent at St. Francis. My parents sat me down and told me we were moving. Moving? I shouted out. Where? They said we were moving to the country. What the heck did that mean? I found out soon enough. One Saturday morning, we all piled into my dad's 55 Ford and took a ride. It seemed we were driving forever when I noticed a sign on the side of the road. You are now entering the village of Andalusia. My mind immediately went back to a horror movie I saw at the New Lyric Theater called Village of the Damned, a story about a small town in England where many of the women got pregnant at the same time, giving birth to blonde, blue-eyed kids whose eyes would light up when they got mad. If they looked at you with the eyes glowing, they would make you do stuff like drive your car into a wall, burn yourself, and other crazy stuff. I told my parents I was not moving here. Now, what I wanted and what my parents wanted, though completely different, ended up with me having to move to the village. The house we ended up in was a small, three-bedroom, one-bath house, all on one floor with a large yard. Welcome to Andalusia, Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Before we start the next part of the walk down memory lane, let's go back to Germantown one last time. I don't want to give anyone the impression that I was a little saint while growing up. I would get into my fair share of trouble. For example, when singing the novenas during Lent, Mass was at night in the lower church. St. Francis had a main upper level and a small lower level. Across the street was the convent, and the nuns would open the door and cross the street to the church. Some of us, including Tom, would have these tiny firecrackers. They were the kind that had a string at each end, and you would pull the string and it would make a small popping sound. We would attach a couple of these to the doors and run across the street and hide behind the steps waiting for them to come out. The door would open, the firecrackers went off, and they continued like nothing ever happened. I could never figure that out. What did happen is Tom and I would always be the ones that got caught, and the nuns would have us do extra work in school the next day. When I brought this up to Tom when we were on the phone, he denied ever doing it. We started laughing with him telling me I had one hell of a memory. You never forget your very first friend, no matter how far apart you live. When my parents would go out, Jenny, who lived just a few houses down the street, would babysit us. We would always have fun when Jenny came over, but we were always in bed by the time my parents came home. She is another example of someone who never asked about my cerebral palsy. At least, I don't remember her asking or saying anything about it. She treated me no differently than my other brothers. I have been able to keep in touch with Jenny through Facebook after years of not seeing her. We got together again through some high school online site. I had the biggest little boy crush on Jenny. I finally got to talk to her after more than 30 years. It was a fun conversation on the phone, remembering the old neighborhood and the people we knew. Her parents were like a second set of parents for me. I remember them fondly. I often go back to my days in Germantown, especially if a certain song comes on the radio, Venus by Frankie Avalon, which always takes me back to Germantown. A certain smell like wet concrete sidewalks, the smell of a Christmas tree. There were nights of crying myself to sleep, but there were also Sister Anastasia and Sister Rose, Tom and his family, Jenny and her family, my milk box scooter, the choir at church, and Variety Club camp. You see, despite the name calling and all the other crap I had to endure, There was plenty of good that helped me become the man I am today. To say thank you to these friends just doesn't seem to be enough. My biggest fear now was moving to Andalusia, and whether I would find blonde, blue-eyed kids that had eyes that glowed.